he returned fire with the hand cannon, switching back to single fire and doling out head and upper torso shots with the armor's targeting assist. He shot them down mercilessly as he climbed up through the shaky network of catwalks that formed the support walkways for the loading tractor that supervised this bay. Not all of the savages were dead by the time he reached the main control room at the top and climbed a ladder up through its ceiling into silent darkness. But the savage ambush had been effectively ruined, and for the most part they were doing little more than laying down covering fire in order to pull their wounded off the deck. Which seemed odd to Rex, because why should they care about the wounded? He put the unbidden thought away. He didn't need to humanize these post-human monsters. Not now. Not ever. He crouched down behind a control panel and checked his charge packs. He was down to half and just a few grenades. Ammo for the hand cannon was solid. Zero jump juice. And three more levels to reach the wild man. 1 hour and 27 minutes until official sunset. A lot of ground to cover, and a short time to do it in. Chapter 73. The wild man came too while they were immersing him, just before, in fact. The savages had their hard, cold metal gauntlets all over him, and for a moment as he came out of that terrible nightmare of the old place where he had lived with her, he thought they were rescuing him. The savages were again humans, just like him, in those first unclear seconds as he struggled to breathe while they drowned him. Not the galactic boogeymen that parents used in order to frighten their children into good behavior, leveraging tales of abduction and slavery if vegetables weren't eaten and studies not performed. Clean off your plate or the savages will come and snatch you straight out of bed, I promise you that. In hindsight, years later, every parent knows they shouldn't have done that. But in the exasperation and fatigue of constantly trying to make some little version of yourself into something better than you'd become in order to survive a galaxy with an appetite for destruction, well, sometimes you used all the cards, even the bad ones, even the nuclear ones. You can feel guilty later when they're safe. Like Tyrus Rex, thought the wild man as he came up from the sickly, sour, sweet maple syrup pool, gasping for a new lungful of air before they managed to plunge him back down. Like Tyrus Rex using nukes to save the galaxy when no one else, except him and his rifle, would do anything to stop another family from disappearing. Do another one, babe. In that moment, they, the savages, seemed just as human as he was, or even like the angels some talked of. But then his mind came to full alertness, and he realized they weren't angels. They were demons from the outer dark. He'd kill them all. Except he couldn't move. There were too many hands. Cold, metal hands everywhere. They'd taken him to a subterranean road much like the ones he and Tyrus Rex's soldiers had traveled through during that seemingly endless night and day. The ones that ran alongside the vast walls of bubble-stored New Vega civilians. Maybe it was the same road, he thought, as they forced his head and limbs beneath the gel. For good this time. No coming back up. They held on too tight and were too strong. And in the moment before his eyes went under, his head and neck straining to the last in this vat shaped like a sarcophagus, he saw the floating dirigible in the loading gantry and the wall of bubbles, a wall of humans, waiting to be eaten by eaters who were once human. He tried to move, tried to fight them in some way. Fight back, babe. Do something. You have to do something. But the body would not listen, and all he could do was watch helplessly as he was drowned in their gel solution, their horrible gauntlets holding him beneath its goopy surface, his body completely restrained, not only from the hands, but from the gel itself. It was grabbing hold of him, pulling him down, his mind screaming as his lungs filled up with gel. And those soulless faces, alien things no human mind could have ever conceived of, stared down at him with no pity, remorse, mercy, or even grace. The sound of their harsh electronic barking carried through the gel, and it was like they were laughing at him as they did their drowning work, laughing along with one another like bullies having their fun with some stray child they'd caught to torment. Out beyond the edge of town, where no one can save you. In the late afternoon, turning to evening dark, the feeling that you'll never see home or your family again. Helplessness filled him. He knew he was drowning, dying. But not just yet. It would take a horrible long time for him to die. The gel had a narcotic effect that overwhelmed every sense, taking him away from that horrible place to a promised future of 1,000 unending nightmare lifetimes, a future of bleak hopelessness, an unending torture without end, waking up from one nightmare only to find yourself in one even worse. It's an endless well, his drug-ravaged mind screamed as he got a look at it. And then words he could not contain struggled up out of him and into the dense gel, sounding nothing like words but needing to be cried out, if only for the horror of what was happening. It's forever in here, he screamed to no one. Chapter 74. The twin-barreled defensive gun of the APC was literally smoking by the time they made the end of the rail line at the stadium terminal, and the vehicle's drivetrain was a mess of hard clanks and reeking burning lubricants. But they'd made it. Wave after wave of savages had sought to overtake them and had been beaten back on the strength of their up-top weapons' devastating effect in the enclosed tunnels they escaped through. They'd made it. There was no longer any pursuit. In the course of fighting off the last wave of savages, Martin, operating the turret, had overcycled just to smash to pieces a lumbering mech that looked like some great mechanical troll thundering after them on hands and knees while lobbing missile salvos the APC's onboard defensive ECM system barely managed to scramble. The tunnel had been ripped to shreds by the missile strikes and collapsed in sections behind the fleeing APC, blocking further pursuit. For now. Everybody out, shouted Captain Davis. McAfee, who'd been wedged into the boarding well, popped the hatch and rolled out onto the high-speed magnetic tracks beneath the platform. Carrying details were quickly organized for Greenhill, who was tranked out, and for Sergeant Major Andres, who'd turned gray and was barely breathing. Neither man was conscious. He don't look so good, commented McAfee as they hoisted the senior NCO up onto the platform. Sergeant Major's tough. Don't mind him, said Martin. He's going to make it all right. He was covering the retreat with the only two remaining sidearms that had charge packs. All charge packs for the rifles had been expended. The soldiers and civilians made their way up through the still pristine levels the savages had apparently not tried to breach during their initial counter-assault against Objective Rio. That was until they reached the last set of protected escalators that led up from the secure government access to the stadium and the high-profile dignitary seating. The security had been state-of-the-art for the Galaxy Games that had captured the collective galactic world's attention just 2 years back. New Vega had been the place to be that glittering summer. Now, below that final set of escalators, they came across savages who had died by the score. Ruined corpses and shattered armor littered the scorch-marked and carbon-scored marble flooring. Halt and identify, came an enhanced voice from up at the top of the long escalator system. Temporary quick-deploy barricades had been erected up there, and it was clear several heavy pulse muzzles were now centering on the ragtag group of soldiers and the wounded, desperate civilians who'd just shown up in their kill zone. It's Captain Davis of United Worlds Navy, Special Sections. Admiral Sulla knows we're coming through. For a long moment, they were greeted by a tense silence. Someone up there was making a decision either to open fire or to take the time to check out the Navy captain's story. Where's Tyrus Rex? Came the reply. Admiral wants to know. I'll tell him myself, she shouted up. Please let us through. We have wounded. Another long pause. Some of the civilians began to whimper at this final obstacle when they had made it so far and come so close. The two twins had taken a sticking close to Davis, and she heard the stronger one, the older one, whisper as her younger sister began to cry. Don't worry, the older one said. They're soldiers, not monsters, and all soldiers are good, just like Austin. In that moment of waiting, hearing the little girl express faith in a thing that wasn't always true in Captain Davis's experience, she wished for a better galaxy than the one she was handing off to the next generation, if there would even be a next generation. She moved to both of the girls and took their hands in hers, feeling their tininess as she covered them, vowing to change things as best she could with what time remained to her. "It'll be okay," she whispered, as she continued to watch the barrels of the rifles of the sentries poking out from their fighting positions high above, pointing at them, pointing at the girls. The voices shouted down once more. "Admiral says you're clear. Come up one at a time. We'll need to search you. Send the wounded up first. We have medics on the way." And then Captain Davis began to breathe, realizing she had not, in those long moments between life and death, when she'd wished for a better galaxy. Chapter 75. There was one charge pack for the heavy left. Ammunition for the hand cannon was depleted by a little less than 50%. A couple of fraggers. One tactical machete. Tyrus Rex had fought his way through the checkpoints and quick reaction forces that had responded to his journey through the levels surrounding the old colony ship. Leading the savage teams along a running battle through an interconnected series of subterranean ventilation systems to keep the whole complex fed with oxygen, he'd decimated their forces by fractions as they dared to follow. That they were aware he was still running around inside their complex was clear. They were very aware. The last wave to come at him was a group of heavy infantry savages with much better armor, servo-assisted light machine guns, and some sort of energy shields. Rex had led them into a narrow ventilation feed, climbed upward through the blades of a giant fan that fed into surface air chambers, and then shot them down as they pursued, falling back each time they attempted to dislodge him with grenades. In the end, they'd paid a heavy price and pulled back due to losses. He'd survived, but it had taken time, time that was running out, and he'd purposefully taken a roundabout path, trying to stay away from his target destination so that they wouldn't fortify there or send more reinforcements. But now, with the savage heavy assault teams pulling back until they could come at him from another angle, it was time to make his move, time to rescue the big sniper. Less than an hour until the Chang departed and the whole planet got cooked. No part of his mind doing the math told him he wasn't going to make it despite the overwhelming evidence that he wasn't going to. He had a plan, if Sulla was game. A way of maybe bringing about what the Admiral and Captain Davis seemed to think would win the war. Not trigger nukes, but a unified fighting force. But the plan was no good if he didn't get the big sniper out of the deep freeze. But that's not true either, is it? His mind told him, as he raced along a maintenance passage to get to a spot overlooking the last known position of the wild man's transponder. Its signal had gone offline an hour ago. "You could just leave him," continued that other voice, "because you don't need him for this plan, not really. You can still make the rendezvous at the LZ. Or you can make it to Plan B. You don't have to rescue him. Why throw yourself away?" He switched off that other part of his mind that always offered the easy way out. He'd learned to ignore it a long time ago, even when it told him the truth. He had said he'd do his best, which meant if there was a chance, then he'd do everything he could. A few minutes later, he was in position near the last known ping. He'd come out above the roadway that ran along the massive vault of bubbles that were seemingly glued to one wall of the storage well. If he didn't look closely, they just looked like a big expensive corporate office art decoration to make some company that was like all the rest seem somehow different. Individuals working together might have been the message. But the armor didn't tell lies. Inside his HUD, he was getting tags on the thousands of suspended lives floating in crystal-clear amber, as it were. They were barely alive in there, hovering between life and death. The transponder was still not pinging. Rex, who'd had to crawl the last 100 meters once the maintenance access turned a little more than a large air duct, ran through the armor's functions. He called up an image of the one they'd all just called the Wild Man. Then he accessed the armor's recognition algo, something he'd used a lot during the frontier days of the galaxy, after the savages had taken him, and before they began to show up in earnest, when he'd worked as a bounty hunter and law enforcer for hire. When he'd grown tired of soldiering for generals who seemed indifferent to anything other than making sure their troops were good and killed in skirmishes between planets seeking domination, the way nations and continents once did. Days long gone once the galaxy got civilized. The armor, a thing that had come from the savages, in a place they'd found inside the galaxy that didn't exist in space-time, the Quantum Library, they'd called it, ran the search, using the HUD to examine the faces of the thousands of men, women, and children trapped inside the bubbles along the far wall, searching every face for that of the wild man. Within 3 seconds, it had a match. A filled bubble halfway up the wall and a tiered cluster was the one the wild man had been stored within. The processing dirigible was still floating along the tier, loading more survivors taken from a multi-wheeled cargo hauler. 7 savages stood around the vehicle, but there was no other defensive force. Rex ran through his plan. More than likely, once he extracted the sniper, he'd have to carry him. Couldn't count on him to be of much help for the short term. So, best to use the heavy now, because he'd need less weight when it came time to exfil. And he'd gone this way before. Within the tunnel leading past the storage well, there was an access door that accessed a stairwell, a long one. Davis had mentioned, as they passed it the first time, that it led right up to street level. A fire exit route up from the lower levels, which hadn't done them any good when they had an APC and a trigger nuke to cart around, but now it would do just fine. A small sign outside the stairwell read, "Emergency exit. Do not use except in case of emergency." If ever there was one, now would qualify. That was the best he could do to get them both out of here. If he could get them above ground, then maybe there was a chance the comms would work and something. Rex hadn't figured that part out yet. He smashed out the cover of the air duct and dropped down onto the dark subterranean roadway across from the Canyon of Bubbles. Walking quickly toward the savages surrounding the cargo truck, he raised the heavy on its sling and began to fire from the hip, his targeting HUD helping him to send rounds just as accurately as shoulder fire. The first thing that happened was several savages dropped, surprised, in death. Then those not initially hit by pulse fire scrambled for cover. This was fine for Rex's purposes. Now they would try to assess the situation. By popping out for a look or engaging to pin him down while a flanking team closed the distance from another angle. Standard tactics, useful for what they were. He unloaded a brutal burst on the first savage to pop from around the truck. Pulse fire tore the head and torso to shreds at the same moment that 3 savages on the opposite side of the cargo hauler began to fire from underneath. Hot rounds skipped off the pavement. Their fire was wide and bad. He'd rattled them, but they'd recover. If he gave them time, which he wasn't going to. With barely a pause, he bent over, lowered the heavy pulse gun, and swept the street beneath the truck. Pulse fire smashed into faceless helmets, leaving horrible gaping holes in the dirty glass of the twitching bodies. The rest of the team was spooled up and charged from behind the vehicle. Rex merely stood, pivoted, and dumped the entire charge into overcycle fire, cutting them all down before they even got 5 meters. The felled savages were armored, so most weren't killed outright, but they were all knocked down by the relativistic effects of the pulse gun, and most were left with smoking holes in their various systems. Without slowing his pace, Rex unclipped the empty heavy and dropped it onto the roadway. He pulled the hand cannon and put a single round in the helmet of each still-moving savage. Then he rounded the truck and made for the gantry leading out to the processing dirigible. Gunfire streamed down from a sentry team stationed on board the dirigible. They had seen the carnage that had been done to their rear guard, but the shots missed, merely smashing the wide windows of the cargo hauler between Rex and them. Rex waited for his armor to tag every armed savage inside the dirigible. Then he scrambled up the gantry and used burst fire from his hand cannon to make sure that each defender had been cut down. He was burning through what precious little ammo he had left, but it was necessary. He boarded the airship and pulled the tactical machete with its carbon-forged blade with his offhand. A savage medical tech, who'd been processing the drugged-out citizens of New Vega, attacked him with 2 old-school metal scalpels, swinging them in wide vicious arcs as he advanced. The first one struck Rex's armor and snapped. The second one never made contact, as a sudden slash from the machete brought the assault to an immediate halt. The savage, unarmored and wearing only some sort of biomechanical carapace, howled like a wounded dishwasher and went stumbling through pristine racks and trays. There was one other tech remaining. This savage came at Rex with a spinning bone saw. Rex raised the hand cannon and blew the tech's head off at point-blank range. All resistance had been dealt with. Time for extraction. 60 seconds later, he'd used the dirigible's rudimentary joystick controls to center the floating ship's extraction portal with the bubble where the wild man was stored. He moved from the controls to the extraction portal and studied the bubble's surface, aware that klaxons were reverberating throughout the tunnels. They were definitely onto his scent once more. It was one thing to wipe out their frontline troops in the running game of tag with weapons they'd been playing for the last few hours. It was quite another to go after their food source. That was sure to trigger the direst of alarms. The savages didn't mind taking, but they hated to be taken from. "Tells you volumes about what monsters they've become," that other voice told him, but he wasn't interested. They were less than human to Tyrus Rex, and he'd stopped trying to figure them out beyond tactical advantages he might use to kill them. He felt nothing when killing savages, even less than when he'd killed animals for survival or protection. They were less than. The bubble in front of him had a connecting hose, apparently for draining the gel in which the wild man was stored. Rex didn't have time for that. He smashed the machete into the glass. It was heavy glass, but the machete could cut ceramic armor like it was made of butter. Two more strikes, and the glass collapsed into sheets of spiderwebbing debris. As the gel flooded out in amber goopy waterfalls, he reached his gauntleted hand into the mess. Over some PA system, a savage voice bellowed in its peculiar electronic shriek. It sounded like an old arcade game speaking 20 different languages at once, and it went on and on about something. He figured it boiled down to protect the nest, all must respond, but repeated 1,000 times a minute and said with a frantic neuroticism. The HUD identified dangerous narcotic compounds within the gel flooding out from the bubble that could have harmed him were the armor not protecting him. It was already suggesting a drug suite it could manufacture just in case there was an integrity breach in the armor. No time for that either. He sheathed his machete and pulled the wild man out through the bubble's smashed front, clearing away as much fractured glass as he could, knowing there'd be some cuts. For a moment, Tyrus Rex thought he'd caught a break. The big sniper's eyes opened, wild and rolling, and he focused on Rex as he coughed and retched and spewed out thick, viscous gel. And then, gel mixing with spittle on his chin and dripping from his nostrils, eyes, and ears, the wild man croaked, "It's forever in there." Then he collapsed into unconsciousness once more. Using the armor's servo assist, Rex got the bigger man over one shoulder in a fireman's carry. He moved for the gantry to exit the madhouse floating hospital or morgue that was the dirigible and drew his hand cannon. Best have it ready. He was sure to meet more savages soon. Already he could hear savage scout cycle teams streaking down the midnight black tunnels, coming for him. And other things too. Big lumbering mechs that must be brimming with missiles and all kinds of weapons he didn't have a tactical answer to right at this moment. He only had one plan now. Run. Fast. That was the best he could do. Chapter 76. Admiral Sulla met Captain Davis in the triage station that had been set up on the aft cargo deck of the Chang.
"Where is he?"
asked Sulla. A medic was treating a bad cut she'd sustained somewhere along the way and hadn't even noticed.
"He went back in after one of our..." she began.
What were they? What had they been, that little fellowship of soldiers and a Navy captain who'd suddenly formed up after the battle to complete one last denial-of-service mission? To deliver a doomsday weapon like no other weapon mankind had conceived of in all its years of turning things, forces, and concepts into weapons? a weapon that burned a planet up within hours. A brotherhood, Rex had called it, brothers, even her. Thinking about each of them, the ones she'd journeyed with for the last night and a day down there in the tunnels, it seemed like she'd always known them better than the crew she'd lost here, or lovers she'd once known, or family she'd left behind. One of us, she finally finished. He went back after the sniper who got captured. Tyrus, said Sulla, saying the name as if it were a curse. His cool calm and at times stern admiral's exterior was now gone. There was nothing but concern here, the concern of one best friend for the other. Who would have thought Tyrus Rex, galactic war criminal and a senior ranking admiral in the United Worlds Navy, best friends?
I don't know what happened after that, she said,
wishing she could provide some relief or comfort to the now very human admiral standing before her.
He turned off calm after he left us. I don't know why.
Sulla made a face that said something not pleasant and best left unsaid. The sniper? He asked. She nodded because there wasn't anything else to say. Tyrus Rex had gone back after one man who probably wasn't even coalition attached.
And what about the doomsday weapon that's about to go boom? That's what you should really be asking about, Admiral.
And the trigger nuke? Asked Admiral Sulla. She nodded tiredly and waved one dried, blood-covered hand.
It's armed. Geotrap 2. It's going to go off in 20 minutes and 33 seconds. I wouldn't expect anything else.
Sulla nodded, but his eyes and his thoughts were far away.
I probably don't know him, she said, as well as you do, sir, but I'd bank on that weapon detonating from... Well, he's a hard man, a good man. Definitely not the war criminal the governments make him out to be with the help of the media. I know that now. But he's a hard one. He'll let the trigger detonate because killing savages seems to be what he lives for. Besides the thing that sent him back after one of us, even if he has to die to do it, he'll cook the planet to kill as many savages as he can. That's his endgame. And it might as well be today.
Sulla turned toward her, staring at her, and she knew from the look in his eyes that she had correctly diagnosed his oldest and best friend, that the admiral had learned these things long ago. Then he nodded once, and more to himself than to her. You're probably right, Captain, but I'll still do everything I can to rescue him. I owe him that. And then the admiral was off, heading back to the bridge of the Chang. But Davis called out after him. She felt a burning desire to know more of the man she just fought with, and something told her the admiral might be her last opportunity to know it.
Admiral,
Sulla paused and looked over his shoulder.
He said he was hundreds of years old. Is he mad?
Sulla nodded curtly. Absolutely. Chapter 77. Even inside the environmentally controlled armor, Rex was sweating loads. In order to save the armor's charge, he had cut off non-essential functions and dialed back the cyber strength enhancements, which meant he was largely on his own as he carried the giant sniper up flight after flight of stairs to reach the surface of New Vega. He might need that power later, if things were close at the end. He gasped for breath and sweat ran down into his eyes, but he could hear the savages below him on the stairs coming up after him, and he pushed himself to move faster, stair after stair, flight after flight. It was a race to the top now. They knew he was going this way, and surely they'd try to cut him off ahead. He'd deal with that when he came to it. He pushed himself up another flight with the dead weight of the giant on his back, and he was glad he'd trained without the armor powered on, like an ancient knight in a glimmering metallic suit. The armor was the greatest piece of military equipment he'd ever encountered in all his long years, but if relied on, it could make a man weak with dependence. And so he'd trained, just like back in the army, just like in selection for the... He couldn't remember what he was being selected for as he humped his way up another level. There was still far to go, and it seemed by the sound of the savage's boots that they were gaining on him. Still far below, but gaining. He couldn't remember the name of that course after Ranger School, either because of how long ago it was or because he was so tired. "Long day," he gasped and pulled himself upward. "Long one." The giant sniper on his back was dead to the world, but the armor assured Rex that the man was alive, even though he wouldn't be coming around anytime soon. At this moment, Rex was actually glad the sniper had lost his terrific large-caliber rifle somewhere along the way. That thing had probably been 60 pounds alone. "Q course," he huffed as he hit the topmost level. "That was it." He banged through a security door and exited out onto a red daylit street between two crumbling office buildings that were still on fire and raining down ash. Glass littered the sidewalk, and the dead bodies of coalition forces and savages lay thrown about like the forgotten rag dolls of careless giant children who had tired of playing war. His armor told him he had incoming messages from the Chang. He also knew from the map, range, and time that he'd never make the LZ in time. Over the city streets, doomsday sirens wailed. It was hard to tell if the sun was setting, but through the inky wash of great billowing fronts of oily smoke, he could see enough of the sky to tell that dusk would be here soon. And then, boom, no more New Vega once the trigger nuke detonated. He started off down the block toward a wide intersection, telling the armor to scan and see which building still had emergency power. He needed to know that before he contacted the Chang. There were savages moving in on his position. The armor's radar tagged incoming groups, and it identified a massive tower that was still running on an emergency backup generator. It was just across the intersection, in the middle of which lay a smoking coalition tank. The crew had been burned alive trying to get out. He was halfway across and hustling for all he was worth, practically bent double and stumbling, when a savage point man spotted him and opened fire. Rex had already caught sight of him out of the corner of his eye and was running for cover by the melted tank. He could hear the savage calling out to others as it slapped a new mag in and ready to engage. Rex paused only briefly behind the tank before bursting forth, firing as he did and running for the building. The hand cannon roared, its recoil sending Rex's unpowered arm jumping as the savage scout dropped on the sidewalk, its body twisting and turning. More were coming at him from both sides of the intersection, firing wild. He made the smashed glass darkness of the tower and the interior beyond, and he activated the comm link with the Chang. Sulla was there at once in his ear. "Tyrus, what you look?" Rex lowered the sniper next to the elevator bank, slammed his hand for the elevator call, and ran back toward the lobby. He needed to keep them back for a moment.
"Suit's ping is coming through now, Cass, but you're not the only one who's going to be able to see it."
He fired at two savages storming the lobby as fast as they could, turning themselves into a cartwheel of limbs and arms. Two brutal bursts smashed into the chest of one, spinning the savage back and away to die on corporate furniture. For the other, Rex had to overcorrect, because they were both moving at each other so swiftly. Rex striding and the savage spinning. He shot the savage's legs out from under him, and the thing flopped to the polished floor. Rex put two bullets in the savage thing's skull helmet almost as an afterthought. He covered as the rest of the mop-up platoon opened fire from the street outside. Sections of giant windows that hadn't been fully destroyed in the madness of the previous day's battle collapsed inward on the lobby, sending fragments everywhere. Luxurious corporate furniture exploded in tufts of synthetic stuffing as hundreds of rounds were thrown at wherever they thought Rex might be. They were taking no chances. They wanted him dead.
"I read you at Fifth and Horizon," said Sulla over the comm. "You're never going to make it back to the LZ in time. Suggest you—"
"Negative, Sulla," said Rex. "I'm making for the roof. Bring the Chang in and pull us off this tower, or get out now, but that weapon goes off in—"
Rex checked the countdown on the lower corner of his HUD.
13 minutes.
Rex couldn't even chance return fire. Everything was exploding around him. Expensive woods splintered into the air. Rare leathers received gaping bullet holes. He crawled, shifting position for new cover, and employed his last two fraggers.
ones he'd held back, instead of leaving for the pursuers back on the stairs, just in case something like right now happened, just to keep them from storming the lobby.
"I'm coming in for you, Tyrus," said Sulla over the comm. "Be there."
"Will do,"
he responded and cut the feed. Rex raced back to the big sniper and dragged him into the elevator. An automated voice was telling him that elevator access was currently restricted due to an emergency situation.
"Come on,"
huffed Rex, pulling the fiber wire connector off his helmet. Savages were storming the lobby now. Their own version of frags and flashbangs were being lobbed in, followed by hurricane fronts of gunfire as they advanced.
"They're coming,"
slurred the wild man from the floor. He raised one hand to point, forming a gun with his thumb and index finger.
Boom!
Then his hand flopped down. His eyes rolled wildly.
"Don't worry about them," said Rex.
Once he was hard connected into the building AI, he released an algo worm that covered the building's emergency restrictions. He could see the savages now entering the lobby amid smoke and ruin, targeting lasers sweeping for him, and then the doors closed, and they were on their way to the top. 75 floors to go. Sulla already had the Chang ready for a hot departure. Crew were in position, weapons online and engines at departure idle. Moments after losing comm with Rex, he had the gears up, and the last of the Coalition presence was lifting off from the ruins of New Vega.
"Two hulks on an intercept course," said the captain from the co-pilot seat. "They're going to try to take us before we make jump."
"This is going to be close," said Sulla as he ran through the systems, flicking off everything they wouldn't need.
Then he brought in the deflectors and sent as much power as he could to the forward screens.
"Sir," Captain said, "I have jump coordinates preloaded and ready."
"We're not going to jump yet, Captain. We have the opportunity to make an additional pickup that the Coalition cannot afford to miss. Admiral, we'll be lucky to get out at all once the savvies reach us. You saw what those hulks did to the fleet on arrival, sir."
The engines were whining toward takeoff power. The sun had begun its final descent behind the sea to the west, obscured by floating drifts of black and gray smoke. Sulla added power and set course for Fifth and Horizon, rooftop of Intersystem Capital.
"I didn't get to be admiral by playing the odds, Captain."
Chapter 78. The elevator was the opposite of everything involved in the battle of the past few days. Whereas it seemed everything else had been shot, burned, exploded, or torn to pieces, nothing unmarred by the tremendous battle between both sides, the interior of the swiftly rising elevator was untouched by all the wrongs that had occurred at the end of New Vega City. It even played a corporate soundtrack of instrumental recordings of various pop songs. The wild man hadn't lost consciousness again, though he was still lying on the floor and murmuring incoherently, conscious, but not necessarily lucid. Tyrus listened and held his hand cannon, readying himself for whatever they were going to find on the rooftop. There were 8 minutes left before the trigger nuke entered its cascade sequence and detonated.
"Sorry, babe," said the big sniper on the floor. "I was gonna kill them all for you, but they got me."
And then the man began to sob.
"I'm not enough,"
cried the wild man, and then he was looking at Rex.
"Nothing is ever enough to bring him back, you know."
Rex did. He also knew this man was suffering over some personal loss. That was why he'd been out here hunting savages, fighting his own one-man war, thinking that was somehow doing something. That was how the wild man had ended up in the biggest fight between human and savage there'd ever been. And perhaps that was really why Rex had gone after him, because this wild man, he was Tyrus Rex on a smaller scale, doing what Rex did with trigger nukes, just one bullet at a time, each waging a one-man war. Chances were, this was the shape of the galaxy going forward. This was what it would be like for hundreds of years to come. Could be longer. And humanity could lose. That was what Tyrus Rex was thinking when the wild man said the same thing, clarity growing in his eyes.
Now that they're working together, I won't ever be enough to stop them. Thought I was, but I wasn't. And they...
The elevator was nearing the top floor now. Rex readied himself as the door slid open. Maybe they'd already have teams up here. Maybe there'd be Savage spotters or snipers up here. Or the spot had been zeroed in for a Savage artillery strike or interceptor strafing run. Maybe the roof would be on fire and there'd be no way to board the Chang. And maybe Rex and the sniper would be forced to just watch as the ship throttled up and went for jump. But he had to try. The elevator door slid open, and they were greeted by an empty rooftop. The sky beyond was gorgeous in its apocalyptic destruction. Storm fronts of black smoke covered the ruined city. Buildings burned, fires on many levels, and two big Savage hulks were closing in on the approaching Chang. He couldn't see the smaller Coalition ship, but he knew she was there. He could hear her straining engines. And then the two hulks fired missile salvos at him, or in his direction. Smoke trails of Sidewinder snakes erupted across the impending night and drove in straight toward the rooftop. In that moment, Rex knew they were done for. He tapped the omnidefensive bubble on his arm controls. Nothing. It wouldn't work. Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. This was one of those didn't times. So, they were going to die here. If not from the blast of the missiles, then when the building fell. Some old soldier had once told him that. It ain't the bullet, it's the fall. But there was no fall. Not today. At the last second, the Chang hovered into view, and her PDCs exploded the missiles, causing a daisy chain that cleared the sky and sent shockwaves to be absorbed by her deflectors. The air split with a sudden outrage of explosive thunder.
Come on,
said Rex, picking up the big sniper once more, using the armor's servo assist, thankful he'd saved that extra power.
Here's our ride, soldier.
One man ain't enough, darling,
moaned the drugged-out madman on Rex's back.
All the wives and... Baby's gonna die now unless someone comes to help me kill Rex. Too much, babe. Savages, too much now that they're all one and together. I thought I might find you someday, but now I...
Rex grunted and shuffled across the rooftop. It was right then the armor ran out of power, came to its end, and he, too, was at an end. The end of himself. He'd never felt so much like just stopping right there and letting what would happen... happen, regardless of the consequences. His legs were on fire, and they felt incapable of moving any farther. This was how he trained, in a powerless suit, but never after having already endured so much, gone so far. Everyone has a limit.
Wish we could be together, moaned the wild man at the darling he was talking to. Like they is. I'd kill them all for you, darling. But one man ain't enough against the galaxy, is it? Tyrus, tell her, one man ain't enough, damn it. I hate you all,
screamed the wild man at all the savages there ever were, and at the galaxy that had taken away the two he had loved most. Rex's strength failed as he neared the hovering Chang. Another missile strike from the Hulk slammed into the ship, the impact knocking the Chang's lowest deck into the side of the tower, sending glass and steel cascading down into the Savage overrun streets below. The tower groaned titanically. Sulla had put a portside cargo door under the roof of the building while the ship's massive repulsors held her aloft, impossibly adept flying for a ship so large. Drones were screaming across the rooftop, ignoring Rex and slamming into the Chang. Door gunners appeared in the cargo hold, and they opened up on him as he struggled to take another step. No, not on him, behind him. The savages must have finally gained the roof, but there was no time to look back, just to stumble forward. The building shook. It was going to collapse. The armor's HUD warned him that another drone strike was inbound. The helmet, Rex's bucket, was always the last thing to power down. And now it was telling him that the original Hulk that had grounded on the capital of New Vega was sending more drones,
giving everything it had to put down the last remnants of the coalition on New Vega. Rex willed his legs to move forward toward the open cargo bay. Crew chiefs beckoned him forward from within while the door gunners continued to pour fire out onto the rooftop. The building swayed violently, steel crying out and then snapping somewhere in the deep levels below. Sheets of concrete slid down from the faces as the Chang hovered and maneuvered to get in closer. Rex stumbled sideways, and it felt like he was going to go down with the big sniper on his back. He could see Davis hanging onto a cargo strap within the hold, calling out to him, willing for them to make it. Above all this, the looming savage hulks closed the distance. Legs are fried, some part of Rex's mind told him as he continued to stumble forward, moving slowly, a step at a time, one after the other.
Just put him down and save yourself, said the other voice we all have, the one that tells us to live no matter the cost to others.
He saw the trigger nuke's weapon clock in the corner of his HUD. 3 minutes. If the Chang was still in Atmo when it went off, she'd burn too. His mind told him he couldn't go another step. He stood there, hovering between falling over and just freezing, legs locked and useless as bullets raced past him and the building collapsed beneath him.
Yeah, Rex told himself, fine, legs are fried, so what? You'll rest some other day.
And then he began to lumber forward for the last of the distance, the weight of the man on his back crushing him. But he didn't care now. Not anymore, he was too tired to care. All he had left he gave to moving forward. A swarm of drones darted through the PDC fire and slammed into one of the Chang's four main engines. It exploded, sending hull plating and fragments out across the skyline. Chang didn't need four engines to get out, but losing any more would be pushing it. Rex stumbled into the cargo bay. The crew chiefs caught the big sniper as Rex crashed onto the deck. They were dragging him forward and he was blacking out as the cargo door sealed, bullets slapping into the hull, and damage control sirens, internals across all decks, 1 minute until detonation. No idea if the Chang would make it. Medics were loading both him and the wild man onto stretchers, regardless of the fact that the Chang was under fire and was most likely about to go up with three hulks and an entire city within the next 60 seconds. Through his back, he could feel the Chang straining to reach jump altitude. Maybe the nav comp was having to replot because of the two hulks on an intercept course. Maybe. Maybe they'd make it. Maybe they wouldn't. It was out of his hands now. And there was a peace in that, in things being out of your hands, being out of your control. But that wasn't a peace that belonged to Tyrus Rex. It didn't suit him. It wasn't who he was, never had been. And there was still one thing he could do, a thing only he could do, a decision only he could make. He brought up the trigger nuke's menu and watched as the clock hit 30 seconds. Then he selected abort. He looked over at the wild man. They had fresh oxygen pumping through a mask over the big sniper's face. His chest was rising, his eyes were closed and fluttering. Rex gave him a thumbs up anyway. No man is an island, he would think days later when he thought about this moment, tried to figure out why. He would know after he talked to the little girl, the angry twin. But in that moment he just raised one thumb of his gauntlet and said, his voice a harsh croak within his own helmet,
we'll come back. We'll do it together.
And then he passed out. And somewhere along the way, under fire, the Chang jumped free of New Vega, leaving behind a world that hadn't been trigger-nuked and was under savage control for the time being. Epilogue. 3 days later, ship time, Tyrus Rex was released from medical holding. He stood without assistance and wandered the decks of the assault cruiser on his own. When he passed the civilians in their bays, they thanked him and cried, grateful that they, of all those on New Vega, had been spared. But in their eyes, despite the gratitude, he could see the haunted survivor's guilt.
the knowing that they were the few out of the many. And yet still they thanked him. Tyrus nodded and murmured things he couldn't remember. Because what can you say to someone who just lost their everything? City, livelihood, planet, loved ones, all of the above. What can you say? Nothing. So he didn't. Later he saw Greenhill in medical. He was still under sedation. But the big black calf sergeant had fought like a tiger. And so Rex just sat there listening to the machine's work. A doctor came in and told Rex that everything would be fine, that Greenhill would make a full recovery. Rex nodded. Everything would be fine. And yet the doctor, like everyone, knew that the savages were now working together, and that there would be no treaties, no peace agreements. There would be only war. War unending. And it would be either us or them. He saw that in the doctor's face when Tyrus was told that Greenhill would make a full recovery back on Spallerza. Saw that there was really no safe place left in all the galaxy, now that all the savages were one. He saw the doctor smile in that way that doctors smile when they know the prognosis is grim. But the best doctors are like soldiers, in that they're willing to fight the good fight as long as the patient is willing to be the battlefield. The smile of, yes, things are rough, but there are some treatments we can still try. There is always hope, until there is none. Though Rex might be near immortal, barring violent death, he'd seen enough death to know that smile. The smile that said, well, we're not done just yet. Sergeant Major Andres was going through another surgery. Rex waited some more, having coffee, and when it was time to see the NCO, he went into the recovery suite. The Sergeant Major was conscious, but still on narcotics. I'm all right, sir, he slurred slowly. Rex nodded and listened. They talked for a while, which mainly consisted of Andres asking after everyone, making sure they'd all made it back. That's what good NCOs do. Captain, DiMacci got killed before me, sir, said the sergeant major. He was a real good officer, sir.
Yeah, he was.
Both men looked away when a tear ran down the NCO's cheek. Every death is a failure for an NCO, or at least the good ones, the best ones. The ones charged with bringing back the galaxy's children from all the worlds and wars they're sent to. You put him in for an award, sir? Andres asked.
I was never really a colonel in the Spallerzan military, Sergeant Major, said Rex after a moment. So, I don't know if I can, but I'll ask Admiral Sulla to do what he can.
The NCO made a comically hurt face, but maybe that was just the meds. Maybe he meant that hurt face.
Oh, nah, sir. You was my colonel, that's for sure. Wherever you end up, I'll come make sure the grass is cut and the flag is hung right every morning, okay? You just let me know. You be the colonel, and I'll be Sergeant Major.
The tranks the nurse had given him were taking effect and his eyes fluttered, but before he drifted off one last time he said it again, as though from someplace far away and better than all this.
You my colonel. Sir, you all right.
And then he was asleep. On his way to meet Sulla for more coffee, he'd slept enough over the last 3 days. Rex ran into Captain Davis. She didn't say anything, just looked at him. Both of them thinking about the trigger nuke. How come? She asked. Just that. How come you didn't cook the whole planet, Tyrus Rex?
I don't know. Rex said and paused. I just knew.
He scratched his stubble and leaned against a bulkhead.
I just knew it was the right thing to do. This time.
She thought about this, and when she'd made it all make sense in her mind, she said, it was, Tyrus. That it was. He nodded, and they just stood there for a while. When you go back to rescue them, she said, I want in. and then she turned and walked away because she was afraid of what he might say. In the officer's mess, which was quiet in between meals, he sat with the admiral and had coffee, the two of them saying little. And then Sulla spoke. "If you want," he began, leaning in like the old conspirators they'd been for so long. "There's a small ship on the flag deck. I keep it around for emergencies. When we exit jump, you can take it and get away. They've already let me know I either place you under arrest or I face a court-martial."
"And?"
asked Rex.
Sulla smiled. "I'm a little more powerful than they suspect. I have a lot of connections, Tyrus. I don't know if you know this, but I've been around for quite a while."
They both laughed at this inside joke, but it wasn't much beyond a chuckle. "But there's another option, Tyrus," continued Sulla seriously. "I've talked with most of my crew. Everyone agrees something needs to be done about the savages and that the Coalition had their chance." Rex raised his eyebrows but said nothing. Instead, he took another sip of the coffee and listened.
"You were right, Tyrus.
Stitching all those militaries together isn't going to cut it if we're going to deal with the savages effectively. We'll just get opportunistic peacocks like Ogilvy. We'll get hamstrung and hampered and we'll never be allowed to win. You and I have seen it in every other conflict we've ever been in.
I get it now. So, I want to do it your way."
"My way,"
said Rex quietly with no small amount of disbelief. He looked around.
"Nukes?"
Sulla laughed again and then leaned in to explain. They were whispering, because most people didn't need to hear, nor would they even understand 9/10 of what was spoken between two near-immortal ex-slaves who'd become fierce warriors over the course of centuries. Fierce warriors who'd taken on the mission of saving humanity from itself, or rather, from the savages.
"That's not your way, Tyrus. Your way is to fight. You want to kill them first, before they kill us. You were just using the nukes, because one man can only do so much."
Rex remembered the things the wild man had been saying in the elevator, things that made sense then, and more now. Maybe that was why he'd aborted the nuke. To be honest, he still didn't really know why. Maybe it was to save the Chang from burning up in the atmosphere. Or maybe it was because of who was inside the bubbles, all of them, and what the wild man had said when he'd brought him out. "It's forever in there. No one should know that for the last of their existence." And he had a pretty good idea what the savages had been playing with to make that possible. All that quantum voodoo they like to get up to.
"What if there was someone to fight alongside you, Tyrus? Someone. A bunch of us. What if we formed our own fighting force, our own army to find and destroy the savages, and it was independent of any government body? What if we did that, Tyrus?"
"Like a..."
But he couldn't think of the term. It was there, and it wasn't. He was getting old. He didn't look it, but he was.
"A foreign legion," said Sulla. "We could be that."
"How?"
"Like I said, I have connections. A lot of groups, corporations, and people would finance this just to stop the savages from destroying the fledgling galactic economy."
Rex looked at his oldest friend, a man he'd known since Earth, since the Obsidia, and all the years in between.
"I don't know. Outside interests and all, Cass. There's a way it needs to be done, and I don't want to sound arrogant, but I see it, and I don't want someone controlling me for their own agenda. But I'll keep fighting. You know I'll do that. And one day the savages will run out of ships. One day I'll get the last one."
Sulla gave him a look that said, "You think so?" And Rex nodded. Despite the years, despite the new Savage Alliance, despite everything the galaxy could throw at him, one day
he'd kill them all. Or die trying.
And what if you do? What if you die trying? That other voice asked him. What if you die, and no one else takes your place, and the savages end up the dominant life form in the galaxy? What if that, Tyrus Rex? He thought about that dark alien thing from another reality that they'd met on the Obsidia. The Dark Wanderer. A being from beyond the galaxy that had already worked with the savages at least once before. And the results had been supernaturally terrifying. Things that shouldn't have been done had been. What if the Dark Wanderer finds this new savage alliance?
I'll think about it, said Rex, with every intention at that moment of just going on killing them with trigger nukes wherever he could find them.
Later, most of him was leaning toward being on that small freighter when they fell out of jump. Then he could get on with the business of handling the savages on his terms, the best way he knew how. The only way, in light of a more compelling argument. With just hours to go until that decision moment, he ran into the angry little girl, the dominant twin. My sister says I should say thank you now. She stood there like she was confronting him or some monster or stray dog that needed to be dealt with. That was how she held herself in all her smallness compared to the vastness of his age, skill, and size. She stood there, confronting him. She looked at the floor, stared at it hard, forcing herself to do something she didn't want to, even because she knew it was the right thing to do. Doing it because her sister had made her. And in the end, she wanted to be more like her sister than herself.
Don't,
said Cyrus, standing above her in the quiet of the passage they'd found themselves in. I don't want to, she whispered suddenly, and Tyrus saw tears fall onto the deck, even though he could not see her face.
It's okay, he said softly. You're mad at the galaxy, mad at the savages, mad at everything. I get that. You don't need to thank me.
Why? She whispered. Her shoulders were shaking as she tried to hold back the tears that were flowing freely now. Tyrus sighed and looked off.
Because you're not ready yet to be thankful. You don't feel like you have anything to be thankful for. And so it burns in your mouth to say it, and that's okay for now.
It is, her voice small and uncertain, afraid. Then he heard her moan softly, still trying not to cry, thinking of all that was gone and would never come back, of who was gone. Who?
You've lost everyone, said Rex. You're alone, and you feel like you're on an island, but you're not. And someday, well, you'll see that you aren't as alone as you feel, but maybe not for a long time.
She wiped her face with the sleeve of some crew uniform someone had tried to fit her with. It was much too large. How do you know that? She asked. He bent down and looked her in the eyes. They were cold, dark, and burning, but they were looking for help, any port in this storm of vulnerability and emotion. Looking for some light in the storm by which to find a safe harbor.
Because I've been there, Rex said, on that island for a long time.
She stared at him, daring him, testing him to see if he was a liar who told lies to little girls. Then she saw that he was not. Austin was studying poetry before the savages came and Rex remembered that they, the two little twin girls, had been looking for their brother, Austin. He used to teach us about them, about being alone because
our mom and dad were killed before the savages in an accident
It was just the three of us after that, alone. And then it was just us.
Rex said nothing because what can you say? That would make anything better. So often he'd found the only answer had been nothing.
He always read us this one about no one being an island, that even though we were alone, we really weren't. He always read us that one.
Her eyes began to run with tears, but she did not sob. Instead, she continued staring straight into Tyrus Rex, soldier, bounty hunter, war criminal, killer of monsters. Just one man.
Is that still true? She asked.
He pulled her to his shoulder and held her close, because it was the right thing to do, the only thing he could do at that moment. And she began to cry in full, sobbing for all the wrongs that had been done to her, sobbing as though there would never be a day not filled with the sorrow of what had happened. He hated the savages, hated them for doing this to countless numbers of little children. He hated unjust death and those that caused it. He always had. And he knew he was just one man who thought he was an island in the universe. An island that could change the course of the galactic ocean. And he knew that he was no longer enough. He knew that now. He would work with whoever would do it his way, to stop the savages once and for all. They would form Sulla's Foreign Legion, and maybe, they could save those who couldn't save themselves. Maybe they could beat the savages and stop the tears of little girls and everyone else. Maybe the galaxy would know humanity for its humanity, instead of the monsters the savages had become. Maybe this wasn't the end. It was the beginning of the Savage Wars and the Legion. No man is an island. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, the world is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as any manner of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. And therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. John Donne.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Savage Wars, written by Jason Anspach and Nick Cole, performed by Stephen Lang, directed by Mark Vitor, executive producers Ryan McGavin and Mike Charzik, producer Joy Smith, copyright 2019 by Galaxy's Edge, LLC. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.